Here's Alvin Lee issuing us in over here at the Radio Ranch at Republic Broadcasting Network on Sunday, the first Sunday of the time change here in year 22. Welcome, time change for me. I always like this next few months better. Roger Sales, your host here, and of course, I've taken the place of the late Ralph Winteroud, and who left us pretty unexpectedly here week before last, and Tom D got a hold of me by the nape of the neck and asked me if I'd fill in over here. And quite frankly, I bring quite a bit of expertise in this field to the table. And I think that those of you who are not familiar with me and our project, our work, what we've uncovered, will be pleasantly surprised. Although everybody no doubt misses Ralph, and he had his own niche carved out, and what Ralph did was very hard to duplicate. I don't know if anybody else in the movement to steer people to right off the bat that could take care of them like Ralph could. And it's an honor and a privilege for me to sit in and fill in on this seat that he sat in for so many years. So I don't know if we ever did get an exact time frame on how long he had this slot, but I know it was at least, if not 25, it sure was approaching 25, and it may have been a little bit more. That's a lot of consistency in a man's life, and especially in a radio situation and a platform like Republic. It fits a particular niche in a particular, what has been up till the last few years, a pretty small segment of society that was interested in it. Now, all of a sudden, everybody, well, not everybody, but an awful lot bigger percentage of people certainly are asking questions and looking for answers, and RBN, again, plays a really important role here. And so I'm pleased to be with them on a regular basis and part of their staff here and everything, and to bring the information that we've got to you folks who are particularly interested. I think this audience, would you could say, had a particular IRS slant, because Ralph was pretty well all IRS. But, you know, as my teacher John Benson said, who was an IRS specialist, taxes was his deal, okay? And he said, we use the tax movement because everybody's interested in their own pocketbook, and it's a common denominator issue, and we can get more people's attention. This is back in the days when everything was pretty good and people weren't looking for answers. But everybody is interested in their pocketbook, self-preservation, self-interest, and so it is a common denominator issue. And once you get into it, then you can show people about the bigger issue, which is liberty, because it's just one little small monochrome of a whole mosaic, if you will, very important one, no doubt. But you can get people and say they're treading on your liberty here. Oh, really? What's liberty? So anyway, what I did is, after crossing paths very early with these two guys, there was two of them, John W. Benson, the law teacher, the law mind, the great legal, lawful, knowledgeable brain, has left us, unfortunately, about 7 years or so ago. His assistant, partner, long-time brief suit writer, still lives. His name is Glenn Ambort. And he's still with us. He's living up in the Dakotas, South Dakota, I believe. And we don't talk as much as we should, but Glenn kind of turned his back on all this after an incident with the Western Federal Court in San Diego and then the Ninth Circuit on a tax issue. And I said, you know, Roger, he said, it's so pitiful that not only can a jury not understand it, the judge can't even understand it. And we'll get into that deeper as we get into the tax issue. I'd like to go to what I consider my kind of special field of expertise, what I've developed off of their lessons and their experience and the things that they were able to convey to me legally, lawfully, and the insights of the tax system. And I hated the tax system. I hate reading through all those regulations. I hate that they're written at a 31 and 33 grade level, which I can validate for you. They're intentionally ambiguous, hard to understand, so that you'll get buffaloed and say, all right, I'll just pay them. I can't deal with this, and you can't afford to pay somebody else. You can call the IRS and ask, you know, a different 100 different people a question that answers the phone. You'll probably get 100 different answers, okay? So it's just another big scam, and we're going to go into that, and I've got the expertise on that because of all of their hard work, and I don't like to take any credit for that. That's all theirs. I'll take the credit for being able to absorb it and regurgitate it, but which we'll do, but not this week. This week, I just kind of wanted to, as last week was a eulogy to Ralph, really, and I wanted to give some of you in the audience an opportunity to vent get some closure maybe. And I'm sure there was people last week when we came on that hadn't listened to the network in a few days since he had passed, and come tune in Sunday night expecting to hear Ralph, and here's this guy. So anyway, it was kind of abrupt, obviously, and I wanted to give you folks a chance at some closure on that. And so this is, I consider, the first show here of my tenure at however long that may be. It's a very unique opportunity for me in a sense, because I've been out slugging this information, slinging it around for many years in one way, shape, form, or another. I'm about to enter my 30th year of teaching this material. And for many of those years, all I knew was the tax side. And then after a confrontation I had with these creeps, I refer to them often as the individuals representing Satan, after a little battle in federal court in a hearing — it wasn't actually a district court trial, it was just a hearing, because they were trying to, I was, you know, helping people, and my name was getting out there in the Atlanta area, and so they came after me with a notice of books and records, you know, summons for, they want to send one to your bank and all that, and I just decided to fight them. Didn't really make any difference. I didn't make a whole bunch of money, but I did have a fighting spirit, and so I decided to fight them there. It went to a hearing in federal court, and after all of that commotion and how it takes over your life and writing briefs and having to overcome objections and all that kind of stuff, and I said, you know, there's got to be a better way to do this. And kind of that was the fork in the road, you know, right past the Slauson cutoff. This was the fork in the road where I took and went after jurisdiction. And not just the tax system, but what gives all of these guys the right to pass these man-made laws and enforce them on little old me and little old you, okay? And so that was the quest. We've had a lot of people in our movement over many years try and find the answer to that. I believe we've got the answer, and I believe, to my knowledge, I'm first one to really have it concretely, and I'm not taking a lot of credit here. I'll take credit for what I've done and contributed, certainly, but I could never, ever, never have accomplished what I've been able to accomplish had it not been for the hard work, especially of John W. Benson, and a lifetime of studying law. And not, I mean, at law schools, but studying the law and the old law and the origins of it and how it developed and all of the common law, particularly the law of our of the Anglo-Saxon race. And without him and his unique, and I mean really unique, observations and understandings, because a lot of the stuff John learned, they don't teach in law schools and haven't for a long, long time, okay, in our country. And so I was just very fortunate to cross paths with them in the 6 months that they were teaching, because they only taught for 6 months, and that I was a particularly good student and very, very interested. And I was there. See, they taught for 6 months before the IRS came down on them and raided them. I'll tell you the story here in a minute. And they had 1,200 students that paid to go through a course. They'd structured a business out of it, okay? And out of those 1,200, I was the only one, when they closed it down, to take this further. Everybody else kind of was there because they were trying to get away from something I've always thought you know, they had the heat at their backside driving them in to do this and look at this and learn it. And I was, I didn't have a tax problem until I met these two guys. And I was there because I had a keen curiosity and had had for a number of years already in my life since being a high school and college student in the 60s that there was something really bad wrong. And I chased that for a couple of decades until I stumbled into the tax movement. And that was the thread that you pull, you know, when you pull one of those threads and it undoes a whole big bag of something, like a 50-pound bag of flour. You just pull that little thread and it all comes out. Well, that's kind of what happened. I found the thread and have pursued it diligently. It's like nothing in my life has ever grabbed me like this and continued to keep a hold of all these years. It's just been a real joy. Not always. There's been a lot of challenges, a lot of sacrifice to walk down this path for that many years and go through everything I've gone through. Been called every name under the sun, okay, and except right. I've been called that a little bit here lately. But I wouldn't trade a minute of it. It's given my life purpose like it's never had before, and a feeling of completeness. And, you know, the question we all ask ourselves, why am I here? Why am I here? Well, I know why I'm here. I was put here to do this. Some big hand from up above guided my life through the early parts of life where I could do it with some skill, and then cross paths with these two guys in that unique little six-month window. And went off on my own, and here we sit with the answers to the big questions, you know. Had a good student call into the show one day and said, a Gordian knot has to be untied the way it was tied. I don't know if you know the story of the Gordian knot. It's a pretty interesting story. But the guy that untied it got credit with untying the Gordian knot was Alexander the Great. Some questions about how he did it, but that's what we've done, is untied the Gordian knot. This is the way it was tied, and we show you and teach you that and show you how to very easily, inexpensively, and non-threateningly get out of it if you so choose. That is your decision, okay? I've never in the, especially in the 11 years I've been teaching this, since I really got a handle on what's going on. I knew the basics of it before that, but it was an experience of deciding to leave the United States back in 2007 when Obama was running, and I was basically told to by this little voice, and it told me twice, and so I had to go for the very first time and get a passport. I'd never had a passport before, and there I reluctantly went to our little post office there in town in Florida I was living in at the time, and got original DS-11, it's called, and a DS-82, which is a renewal form. One of them was orange, one of them was purple, I remember. In fact, I've still got a couple of those with me here. And picked those up at the little post office and went home and put my foot up on the desk and proceeded to read that orange one. And there at the top of the first page is the answer I've been looking for 15 years. And I'm not kidding you. And I knew right then that I had these guys. Had no idea what I didn't totally understand yet or what we'd come to learn. But that was a seminal moment for me. And that's when everything came together. And ever since that time, I've been telling people about this. Most of the time, people call me nuts and don't like me, anti-government, conspiracy theorist, you name it. But now I got an email from a guy today, just stumbled on one of these podcasts that's circulating out there. And he goes, you've got my complete and undivided attention. That's all he said. Send me some stuff. So now we can get people's complete and undivided attention with this, and it's wonderful. That's the dynamic that's changed in whatever alters our success or failure level here. Before, it seemed like what would happen with people was this, is that we'd have these meetings, and there'd be the same little nucleus, a crew there. Maybe some of you have been in this movement will relate to this, and if you've had any local kind of looking for you're looking for support, man, because you don't want to be the only one out there thinking like this. You feel real alone. So it's nice if you got these groups that you can get together with on a regular basis. You help each other out and just gives you a little strength and a little solace and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So what would happen is we'd have these groups who would meet and discuss these things. We'd try and look for new people, and if people came that were new, we'd give them a whole presentation, you know. But if not, we'd sit around and discuss things of import. But when people did come that were new, it generally turned out that they'd been going along pretty good in their life. They'd been going, let me turn that down so we don't get interrupted with that. They'd been going along pretty good in their life, and, you know, the bills were paid, and Mama was pretty happy, and the kids were all right, and you could come home and get a six-pack of beer and lay back on the couch and watch baseball or football there on the couch. And there might have been some things that bothered you, but it was tenable. And then all of a sudden something happens, some kind of wild card's thrown in there. You know, you get a letter from IRS, you get a traffic ticket, your wife wants a divorce, whatever, you know, kids get in trouble, whatever it is, that all of a sudden now you start asking questions and you're looking for answers. And those would be the new people that we generally get, people that had gone through that type of an experience. But now, see, what happened about a year or so ago is a bunch of us were already in this arena, but people all over the world got their ox gored simultaneously. And now a whole bunch of people which were in that complacency mode before are actively looking for answers. And the worse it gets, the more they look. So, you know, I have people say, where you been, man? This is fantastic information. Where the hell have you been? I go, you know, I've been screaming this from the rooftops for many years. I couldn't get anybody to listen. Okay. So we're inextricably spiritually bound. This is a spiritual war, as many of you know. If you don't realize that yet, I feel sorry for you. And this information may not register with you, because of the people over the years that I've seen it not register with, the vast majority, as I look back and try and analyze these sorts of things, the vast majority of people were the ones that did not have what I term the spiritual gene. Now, some people have it and it's latent, okay, and that's fine. And some people have it and it's more observable and it's more a part of their lives. But one of the nicest things that's happened to me lately is that several of my students over the last year, year and a half or so, have come back and said, you know, I'd never even opened a cover on a Bible till I saw your information and started learning it. And now not only am I in the Bible, but I'm going back and teaching it to my adult kids that didn't get the benefit of me being aware of this when I was young, teaching them and raising them. I've had another guy, he says 70-something years old. He said, you know, I'm a very successful guy. He said, you know, I've had a huge void in my life, and this spirituality just fills a void in my life that's never been filled before. Okay, so those are a few of the comments that I've gotten back. I think we're going to have some music here, and we'll pick this up on the other side. And thank you, Sam.
Population keeps on bleeding, nation bleeding, still more bleeding. It's funny, skies are sunny, bees made honey, who needs money more for me?
Consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, Sierra Madre Precious Metals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast 2-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
Tax the rich, feed the poor. Tell there are no rich no more.
There's another one of the other verses in there says, everywhere are freaks and Harrys, dykes and fairies. Tell me, where is sanity? Prophetic way beyond your years there, Alvin Lee. Well, we'd like to say there's a little sanity here at Republic Broadcasting Network. I know there's sanity here at the Radio Ranch, and that's what we're going to try and do is bring you back into reality. Because until you get these things straightened out in your subconscious mind, you're not really living in a total reality situation. So as we were talking about right before the break, the spiritual aspect of this is very important. And so as we start, let me go back and bring some of that to bear here, if you don't mind. So if you're going to take a world that's based on opposite dialectics, which means the opposite's 180 degrees always in their case, because their whole agenda is built on that little trick right there. That's why everything always appears to be opposite. The Patriot Act is the anti-Patriot Act. The Health Act is the Death Act. You know the routine, okay? Everything is placed at 180 degrees in an opposite direction. It's called a dialectic. That's Ivy League word for opposites, okay? And what they're doing is they're messing with your subconscious and separating it from your conscious mind. Now, there's a great verse, James 1:8, back in the New Testament, and it says, a double-minded man is uncertain in all of his ways. A double-minded man is uncertain in all. Notice it says all, not some, not part. All of his ways. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means that you're how they're using it, and they've skillfully used it against us. It's at the base of this whole plan, okay? And this is going to empower you because it gives you answers every time, all right? And they've placed everything at 180 degrees opposite in the definition, and they've trained you or conditioned you, probably more accurately, like Pavlov, they've conditioned your subconscious to that opposite definition of the word. And so when that word is used, your consciousness might be conscious of it, but your consciousness is only 10% of your day. The 90% of your day and your life is run by your subconscious mind. And if those two are not working together in tandem, if you will, it's debilitating. Or as Dr. Bruce Lipton would say, when they are working together, it's empowering. So that's what we want to do, is get you empowered. And the first thing you do is learn how they've done this to you, okay? And they've done it by setting up these opposite definitions. There's a word for what's going on here. It's called equivocation. You can go look it up in the dictionary. When I didn't know this, a listener called in one of the shows one day and said this, it's equivocation. You know, the word equivocating. If you're equivocating, oh, he's equivocating. That means he's switching back and forth between two different decisions. Here, in this equivocation from our enemies, everything is always placed at a direct 180-degree opposite. Now, what that gives us, now that we understand it, is it gives us an advantage. Because every time we know how to find the answer if we've got a question, we go to what we're looking at, and we look 180 degrees in the opposite direction. And I guarantee you're going to find the answer every time. Okay? So understanding that is a very, very valuable tool. If you go and look up equivocation, when I did years ago after this listener called in, I got aware of it. I went to the 1828 Webster's Dictionary, and it gives the definition of equivocation there, and at least the one that I was looking at. And at the bottom, there was Mr. Webster had some footnotes down there. And at the bottom of equivocation, he had, this technique is often used by non-Christians to fool Christians. Yes, 1828. Now, one night I used to listen to a great pastor named Pastor Pete Peters. Some of you might be familiar with him or his work. He's, again, deceased again. And his website's still maintained and up on the web. It's scripturesforamerica.org. I should give some plugs to these guys. scripturesforamerica.org. If you've never heard Pastor Peters, all of his sermons are there. But whoever's got them posted, they didn't put any descriptions on it, so it's kind of like a potluck, take a chance and pick one. And but this guy I always thought was a prophet. I got very many big pieces of the picture and the puzzle from him, not advertently because he knew it, just things he would talk about in his talks on shortwave. He was on WWCR, Worldwide Christian Radio, 5 nights a week. And this was one of the nights he was talking about something, and he talked about this spot in the Old Testament where there was a tribe there that were Baal worshipers, and they coveted the tribe next door's land, women, whatever they had, you know, all their possessions, and they wanted to be able to defeat it and take those things. And so they conjured up Baal, and they were walking with Baal, and they were telling him that they wanted to take these people over, this adjacent tribe. And Baal said, trick them with words. And so that's what they're doing. They're taking this technique of your mind, and they're assigning complete opposite definitions to key words in your subconscious. Now, what happens is, that's a double-minded knot. Now, as you go back and understand the technique and what's been done to you, as you assign a correct definition to that word, you bring yourself into a little slice of consciousness. Before, you weren't conscious of that, and you certainly weren't empowered where those two parts of your mind were working together. And you go through these words, citizen of the United States, resident, money. You know, there's a whole bunch of them, okay? And every time you go in and firmly assign the correct definition to that word, now your subconscious and your conscious are working in tandem. And now you're empowered and you're back a little bit more into consciousness and real reality instead of this dreamland that most of us have always known. And there's some music, so we'll pick it up at that point when we get back on the other side. See you in a minute.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Come back from that little short interlude. Roger Sales back with you here at Republic Broadcasting on the Sunday night edition of what used to be the late and great Ralph Winterrood's spot for many, many years. Roger Sales, kind of the new kid in town, taking the place of Ralph, if that's possible, at least on the air here. And we were talking as we went into that break about the double-mindedness aspect of this and that spiritual connection back to James 1:8, and the fact that these people, as my teacher John Benson used to say, he was a devout Mormon, by the way, and he said, they know the Bible and they know history one hell of a lot better than we do. And I'd say that's very accurate, as everything John told me and taught me, the deeper I get into this, I've never found a spot where he's wrong, quite frankly. So anyway, that's an important aspect of this. It explains to you what they've done to you, how they've done it, and how to get out of it and how to utilize it to your advantage, like jitsu, you know. You take somebody else's inertia and their force and you turn it around against them. And now that we always know what they set things up with, now you know how to always find the answer that you're looking for. Okay. So let's go back and start on this. There's only two statuses in the world. You're either free or you're a slave. And what we try and do is to boil things down to that simple of viewpoint of when we want to find an answer to a question, we want to boil it down to, look, there's only two options. It's either this or it's this over here. And we know when you start at the premise of there's only two conditions, you're either free or you're a slave. And this is a real good way to talk to people also. Here, I'll give you an example. And so you go, if you want to get into a discussion about this or somehow it, something you're talking about drifts into it, and you go and say, okay, let me get some agreement from you. There's only two conditions. You're either free or you're a slave. I like to use the word bond, but, you know, bond is the root word of bondage. Okay, same thing. But you may want to use a little more common parlance. You're either free or you're a slave. And so then you turn around and ask them, which one are you? Now that's an interesting question. Of course, some people are going to say, well, I'm free. You know, Lee Greenwood told me so. So if they come back with that answer, your response is another question. You know, what's the old salesman's game? Always answer a question with a question. So he goes, well, I'm free because Lee told me. You go, well, all right. Can you tell me the things, can you name the things that you can do without a license, a permit, or permission? Think about that. How much can you do without a license, a permit, or permission if you're so free? Now, if they're smarter than that on the other side, you know, I think most people would probably fit the bill on this these days, and they're going, well, I'm a financial slave or whatever. You know, they're not going to tell you they're in voluntary servitude because they don't know that. But they're going to say, yeah, I'm in financial slavery or whatever it is. They're answering, you go, well, would you like me to explain how they've done it and how to easily get out of it? So there's a very simple question. You get agreement. There's only two statuses. You're either free or you're a slave, right? Well, yeah. And so you can always go back and say, well, remember you agreed that, boom. And you take them back there. If there's any equivocation, so there's your two questions. Are you free or you're a slave? I'm free. Well, tell me the things you can do without a license, a permit, or permission. Otherwise, on the other side, I'm a slave. Well, would you like me to show you how they've enslaved you and I easily get out of it? So all people talk about how hard it is to talk to people about this. You just have to know and be able to understand this and have it simplified in your mind, which is what I've been striving to do for 30 years of this, not only to understand it myself first and then to be able to explain it simply. And I'm at a point where I think we've achieved that. You know, one day is very, very interesting because I've had a very adversarial. I've got a wonderful, wonderful mother. She's about to turn 94 years old here at the end of the month, just sharp as a tack. She's got everything but her eyesight. Okay. And so we have had a very adversarial relationship over this information for many years. I come from a military family, an Air Force officer father. And so, you know, kind of had that mindset. And, you know, the military's been real good to my family the whole time I was growing up and everything. And so my mom never did want to hear this. A lot of ladies don't. You know, it threatens their security. They got the security gene, all right, the nesting gene. They don't like federal agents coming to the door and stuff. Don't know why. They just don't seem to like it. So anyway, all these years, and that's part of the reasons I honestly left the country, was not all of it, but certainly as consideration. And I couldn't get anybody to listen to me. I was being called crazy, all that stuff. I said, well, I'll just take off, you know. And so my mom one day here lately, after all this stuff's been happening in the last few years, now all of a sudden she's come around, see. And so we're talking one day on the phone, and she, some days she's in the mood to talk, you know, and she wants to ask questions and get answers. This was one of those days, and she goes, Roger, what's happening? Well, I wasn't expecting it. It was like out of left field to me. And so this when I guess is, you know, I got to give credit to the big guy. The big guy like throws you the answer, right? And it just comes right out. And I said, Mom, do you remember the Jim Crow laws? Of course. They set up a system where they've tricked us all into volunteering to be Jim Crow. Now, that's how complex this is. If you know anything about the, and if you're new and you don't know about the Jim Crow laws, you can easily go look them up. Okay. They've set up a system where we've all been tricked into volunteering to be the political status of Jim Crow. And that's exactly what's happened. And that's how complex it is. Now, is it much more complex in the way it's set up and executed? You betcha. And is it going to have, as some people say, boy, this will get your head spinning around, like kind of like the gal in The Exorcist there? Yeah, with some people it is that way. Some people grasp it very easily, or much more easily, probably more accurate. But that's what's going on, is they've used this trick, equivocation of assigning opposite definitions, so that they can set things up and they can do the fraud and everything, okay? Because the fraud's from birth. But then they ask you these two questions that they've got you conditioned to answer. And those two questions are you a citizen of the United States? Are you a resident? I doubt if there's any American that's listening to this that's ever answered no to either one of those. Maybe a rare person along the way, or somebody that's not one of them that answered it no. But most of us that were natural born Americans, you know, or birthright born Americans under the 14th Amendment, most of us have always answered those questions yes, and we're almost scared. I remember thinking about it for myself, almost scared not to answer it yes. They might deport you or something. So they sit there and they ask you those two questions. Are you a citizen of the United States? And what they're asking you is, do you have the same political status as a recently freed black Southern slave assigned federal citizenship with civil rights after the Civil War? And you answered yes. I know I did plenty of times. I was talking to some guy. He says, boy, I've been asked those two questions hundreds of times. Okay. Yeah, hundreds. And so then the other one is, are you a resident? And we think here, this is another one of these double-minded words, because if you go into, you don't even have to go into a law dictionary here. You can go into Webster's Collegiate Dictionary. And I encourage y'all to go look these things up when I'm telling you here, because if you go look them up, see, it's not some, oh, this guy Roger, I heard him on Sunday night on RBN, he was telling me all this stuff. Well, if you go look at them, see, it's not this guy Roger telling you. Now you've gone and made an effort. You've seen it with your own eyes. Now that information's yours, see? All right, so if you go look up the term resident, which is one of the first words I always look at in any dictionary, okay, because of its importance. This is the key word, the base word of the whole New World Order scheme, is resident. Go look in Webster's Collegiate Dictionary. The very first definition says the act or fact of living or dwelling in a place for some time. And the second definition is exactly the same thing. The act or fact of living or dwelling in a place for some time, except then it adds this, for the receipt of a benefit or the discharge of a duty. That's law. So here's your dialectic, your double-minded knot. When they say, are you a resident, you think, well, I live right over there, sure. And that's not what they're asking. They're not asking a geographical question. Anytime the word resident is used in any legal context, its definition is always legal. That comes from a court case, by the way. Okay. So what they're asking you when they ask you, are you a resident? They're asking you, by the way, here it would be beneficial for you to understand the origins of the term resident in the way they're using it here. And it comes from ambassadorial law, when countries sign a treaty and exchange ambassadors. And the ambassador is, let's say that I'm in Ecuador, that we do have a treaty with the U.S., and the Ecuadorian ambassador is, quote-unquote, in residence in the U.S., as are other ambassadors. So let's say that the Ecuadorian ambassador gets caught out at Dulles Airport with a kilo of cocaine in his diplomatic pouch. What do they do with Mr. Ambassador? They go throw him in the federal pen there and start hurling charges at him? No. they put him on a plane and send him back to Ecuador, because in residence means that the laws of Ecuador apply to him and not the laws of the United States. So when they're asking you, are you a resident, you are telling them basically, yes, I want to live under federal law and be a federal citizen in residence in a state. Because what you're technically asking, and we're going to get into the depths and the legal background on all this, what they're really asking you is, are you a new federal citizen living in, or residing, more technically, residing in Iowa, let's just say, and requesting protection from the federal government against any actions brought against you by the state of Iowa? Remember, after the 14th Amendment, there was a lot of backlash for the what was then the recognized 14th Amendment citizen, the black, freed black slave. And so your resident question is, are you residing in a state requesting the protection of the federal government from any actions against your state? And when you say yes, what that brings in underneath that unsaid action of law, prima facie evidence when you answered that question, if you know the underneath, is that you're asking for protection from the federal government, and that means that you give the federal government your allegiance. Allegiance for protection, protection for allegiance. We know it better these days in our kind of patriot colloquialisms as, if you receive the benefit, you owe the duty. Same thing. It's the absolute base relationship of a key term that you're going to want to be very familiar with, and that's jurisdiction. And that's what I opened up tonight with. What gives that guy in some agency the power to write man-made laws and then send out an enforcement team and enforce them on me? How does he get that power? Okay, that's another way. How does he get that jurisdiction? Well, one of the ways he got it is you answered the two questions yes and signed something your whole life. You gave it to him. Oh, it's set up with fraud on the front end. And that's why they recognize this approach. They have to. Okay. But what you've done is agreed to the fraud in the first question. Are you a citizen of the United States? Oh, yeah, well, I know I got a birth certificate that represents it and this, that, and the other. And my parents were in this condition. They never volunteered out. So, yeah, that's me. And then the second one, the resident, you're going, yeah, I give you the consent to govern me. And now they've got what's the probably most critical element of them pulling this whole scheme off. They've got the consent of the governed, and you gave it to them. Not knowing, of course, what they were doing, what they were asking, all of this treachery and trickery underneath. You had no idea that. You're just innocent. Oh, yeah, well, I live over there. Okay. And that's the enemy that you're dealing with, and you got to get Sun Tzu'd up. It was a big void in Ralph Winterroot's way of approaching this. He thought like Ralph did, and he wanted to read those statutes in black letter law, and if he couldn't find it stated there in a definition that he understood, he didn't give it any relevance. And you can't fight these guys like this. They're playing you to think like you've always thought and have no idea of how they think and set things up, and use the treachery and the trickery of these things like this little double-minded equivocation trick that we've spent a bit of time talking about here this evening, and assigning totally 100% opposite definitions of words to these key words so that you'll get confused. Okay? And that's the whole country. We've all grown up in this little Alice in Wonderland, and it is Alice in Wonderland. It's all in that book, you know. Alice right there at the first says, if I had a world of my own, everything would be what it is, because everything would be what it isn't. And then what it is, it wouldn't be, you see? Well, there's Alice in Wonderland. That's the world we live in, okay? And it's all been done with this very simple little trick of fooling you with opposite definitions attached to words taking over your subconscious. Well, you can break it. Okay, you're the one that's going to have to go back as you learn and as you grow, as you get on and find the importance of these terms like resident, etc., and go in and assign a correct definition and have an understanding of that. Well, you've taken a giant step into a world you'd never been in before. It's called consciousness of what really is going on and the reality of things instead of this, Alice in Wonderland, Wizard of Oz deal they got going on. It's just like the Wizard of Oz, exactly like it. Okay, so that's how they've done what they've done. Where are we on time wise here? Okay, we're gonna go to a website that is particularly instructive and is the one of the few times you'll ever see these bastards being honest. And the only reason they're having to be honest here is to set up the lie that follows. Okay, and it's a big lie. It's a big lie about a little island on the other side of the world called American Samoa. American Samoa came into the system in 1900, and it's this day the only unincorporated territory in the entire federal system. Okay, and I didn't even know about this or understand it when our book was written. By the way, for those of you who don't know, I do have a book out there. It's a little bit dated, but it's an incredibly important book. Everybody should read it at least once, or The Legal Argument, probably more than once. I've had people that read it 10 times in 2 weeks. Okay, and said I got something different out of it every time. The name of the book, Bidebide, is Sovereign to Serve: Government by the Treachery and Deception of Words. You can find it over on thebookpatch.com, and Sam is helping build a little website here for me at the network, and I'll get him the link and get that posted in the section. I've got a couple of other things, a couple of documents up there that can be downloaded that'll give you some things if you want to study. They're very short, very succinct, and to the point. A couple of interviews that I've done on RBN, one with Tom D, another one with Deanna Spingola when she was active on the network here. And what people have been using these for is to set up small group meetings, especially out in Southern California, set up small group meetings. And you don't even have to understand this all that well. People are always intimidated by the amount of information, you know, but you don't have to know all that right at the start. You can just get one of these interviews, put them on your cell phone, get it amplified a little bit with some types of speakers, make some copies of these two-page documents, hand them out to everybody, and sit there and play the interview with Tom or with Deanna. And at the end, you feel some questions. If you can't answer them, steer them to me, you know. But we've got a lot of people that are spreading the news that way. And we'll hopefully continue to build that over there and put some of these resources there for you. And these programs, as we get going and concentrate on these basics, as we get into both the agendas of the jurisdictional issue, and then even further, I will bring to you the in-depth results of about 70 plus years of research by my two teachers and give you a total explanation of the tax code, where it came from. The whole tax system started in 1285, how it originated, how it developed, and how we've become ensnarled with it, and really how easily it is to get out of. This is so simple to get out of all this stuff. And when you do, what you're going to do is connect with the Secretary of State. He's the one guy you got to connect with, and you can literally write out one sentence, notarized or not, affidavit or not, send it to him, passport application or not, and you're out of their system, and they're in checkmate, because they never expected anybody to figure this out. They know very well how easily this is to get out of it, because they know what it is. That's one of the reasons they've buried it so deep. And now that somebody has figured it out, and there are, it appears, millions of people that have filed and are filing these status change documents, they've got no other recourse than to stand mute. Because now you, the people that have done this, and you, if you haven't done it or learned about it, you've got the ability to pile on, if you will, is to put them in checkmate. Checkmate, New World Order. Here's my little one-sentence declaration. Now you've either got to recognize it. Remember I said get things back to a either-or situation? Well, when you do that to these guys, we'll get into this in much more depth, when you submit that to the Secretary of State, they've lost all jurisdictional nexus over you, and none of those agencies can do anything to you. And the only way they can move on you at that point is to totally take the mask off and be a total open tyrant. And that's something they'll never do because of the number differential where there's billions of us and only a couple of thousand of them. And they know the results of that little fight every time. Okay. And so what you do is you, by doing this, if you choose, your choice, by doing this, you become a band of strong individuals who are now banded together in what could potentially be something of great significance and something very negative for our traditional enemies here in this little critical time, in this critical situation that we're in. And so that's why this information is so incredibly important, really. So let's see, we're looking at getting towards the top of the hour. I have a feeling Sam is going to throw some music at me here in a minute. But what I'd like to do is to show you and prove to you what I'm telling you is correct. And there's a lot of information and misinformation in our Patriot movement about where this nexus comes from. Oh, it's the Social Security number. Oh, it's this. Oh, it's the birth certificate. It's none of those things, okay? And we recently had the proof that came out of England late, about, I don't know, August, September of last year. And I'll also have Sam post that wherever he's going to post all this stuff, and I'm not sure to tell you where to go or if he's had time to post it, because some of it I just got to him this afternoon. But this story's in there. You can find it over at Summit News, I believe, .com, summitnews.com. And it was a story that came out of England late last year with a woman that had a child over there at the, I think it's the National Institute of Health, or NIH, whatever their system is called over there. The mom has the baby. The nurse is running now. They've got PCR tests going on all newborns. That goes way up the nose. It's very painful. The child starts squalling and screaming. The mother objects, and the nurse in the hospital turns to the mother and says, "You can't object. This child's our property." That child didn't have in the world long enough to have a birth certificate, a Social Security number, or whatever the equivalent is over there, or anything else, okay? But it was already, and the nurse even knew it at the hospital, the property of the British government. And there is the nexus. The nexus, the origin, and the remedy are all in that story right there. And you're, as Morpheus said in The Matrix, you're born into it. And that is 100% dead accurate. You're born into it. And then they get you to agree with it by tricking you and conditioning you throughout your life to continue to answer yes to those two questions. So there's our whistler. We got a top of the hour break. We'll be back on the other side and explore this a little bit.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site, It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.